This is Evening Jazz, the real Tracy Fields with you tonight, and we have company. Mr. Michael Kayshammer's on the line. How are you, Michael?
I'm great. How are you, Tracy?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see if we can hear you any better now. Holler
for me. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
I'm great. How are you, Tracy?
I'm good. You sound good. Where are you, Michael Kayshammer?
I'm in Victoria, British Columbia.
Which is kind of a long way from South Florida.
Way on the other side.
At any rate, we're talking tonight because Michael will be performing in South Florida on Friday night. That's this coming Friday, the 8th of February. He's being presented by the Gold Coast Jazz Society in Fort Lauderdale. And let's see, the theme of this performance is Going to the Mardi Gras. I guess I should go back to the very beginning. And, well, maybe I'll let you go back to the very beginning, Michael Kayshammer. What's up with this Going to the Mardi Gras thing?
Yeah, what's up with that? Well, you know, I give you a little background, like, for, you know, people who don't know me. I was born in Germany, and I grew up in Germany and in Canada. So for a musician coming from that background to have a tagline with Going to the Mardi Gras seems a little interesting. But for me, as far back as I can remember, when I was 5, 6 years old, I grew up with music, listening to music through my dad and his record collection that was all from New Orleans, basically. And my dad played some piano as well, and he showed me a lot of things when I was a kid. So that type of music is such a second nature to me that, people associate my playing with New Orleans music. I'm not going to go and play purely Mardi Gras music, but I definitely sound like someone from New Orleans.
Perhaps you lived there in a previous existence.
Yeah, and actually I did live there the year before Katrina.
That was definitely a previous existence.
Exactly.
Tell us, who were some of your favorite artists, the people who drew you into the work that you do now?
I've always gone in phases. When I started out, what really got me into jazz and the piano in particular was the type of music my dad listened to was very much 30s, 40s, 50s kind of music. Everything was really based on, you know, everything had a groove, everything had a backbeat, everything was danceable too. And the piano part, all the boogie-woogie piano stuff, the stride piano players, seeing these guys, he would show me videos of these, you know, Fats Waller or Willie the Lion, and I would just be amazed by these sounds coming out of the piano with all this rhythm going on, and that's really what drew me to it in the first place. And you know, to this day, that traditional boogie-woogie New Orleans kind of rhythm is a big part of my music.
Tell us about your relationship with the city of New Orleans.
I remember the first time I went down there, The most amazing thing for me personally was seeing the street signs. I remember walking down the first day and, you know, just seeing Royal Street or Jackson Square or Bourbon Street or any of those places that are in all these songs that I grew up listening to, you know, listening to Louis Armstrong or Professor Longhair, any of those guys. And I was just amazed. It was like, you know, it's a very different thing when you are in a place where history happens rather than when you read about it but when you're there and you have that connection, I kind of felt at home, to be honest, you know.
I trust you worked in New Orleans.
Yes, for sure, yeah. That's actually what got me there in the first place. I went down for a visit, and a friend of mine was playing with a player named Mava Wright. She was a great R&B gospel singer in New Orleans. She passed away a couple of years ago. But I just went down on a trip, and he said, I was hanging out with him, and he said, you know, I have this gig every Wednesday night at Storyville on Bourbon Street, and I got to go on the road, and I haven't found a sub for my gig. Do you want to do it? And so my week turned into almost a year.
Another one of those musical miracles.
One
thing or a couple of things, what stands out? What did you learn that sticks with you that you'd like to share with us about your time in New Orleans?
Well, for me, personally, as an artist and as just an individual, it really changed my life. Now, as a city, I think it's fantastic because it's very much based on enjoying certain things about life. It's based on music, good food, connection with people. There's this feel of community when you walk around in New Orleans, even if you don't know someone. But what I took away from my year there was Marva. But what she told me more than anyone else there was, I can play the piano fine, but she would take me aside and say, "Well, you're a great piano player, but why are you doing it? Why are you here? What's your purpose of being in this room, playing this music right now?" And it just changed my whole approach to, from where before, it was something where it was almost like you're showing off, where you use it as a vehicle to be a great player. Now it turned into just a part of a message, and actually trying to find a deeper meaning of why you're there in the first place for these people. That was my main lesson in New Orleans and what I took back.
And your deeper meaning, what did you find?
Well, my playing actually totally changed, I find, personally. Because I started approaching it differently, I found that I would listen differently. I started to listen from an audience perspective rather than being an actual participant in the music. I would just be there to let it channel through me.
Uh-huh, transcendence of ego.
Yeah, you just kind of, you have this whole different connection starts happening with your instrument and with the music, because now you're finding deep down in yourself, in a place where you can always be honest with yourself, you find this connection that you actually have a way of speaking with your music now, if it's instrumental or not. It's an easier way of actually getting a point across.
I have to
share. Sorry to get so heavy about that.
I think I may have started it. Thank you for going there with me.
Yeah, of course.
It's 8 minutes past 10. This is Evening Jazz. My guest tonight is Michael Casehammer, who is a piano player, among other things, and he will be performing at the Parker Playhouse in Fort Lauderdale on this Friday. And we're talking a little bit about where he's coming from musically, and I want to share with you, my friends in Radio Land, this quote that I found on his website. Love this. We get past technically brilliant and a spectacle, which is impressive enough, but the blogger Tim Tamashiro says, Casehammer's performance is like taking a Ferrari for a drive through winding mountain highways and then going for a gourmet meal. It excites all of your senses. Whoa, baby.
Who doesn't want that?
Exactly. So you transcend your ego and somebody hears it and this is what comes up on your website?
Well, I mean, that's just what comes out, I guess. I'm being a participant in this just as much as everyone else.
All right. Tell us a little bit about what's going to happen on Friday. What can we look forward to when we see you at the Parker Playhouse?
The quote you just mentioned there from Tim Tamashiro and the whole thing I talked about with this connection earlier that I found in New Orleans, for me, when I go play a show, it's about, getting my point across of loving life. I really love life. I love all aspects of life. I get up in the morning and I can't wait for my day to start. I love music. I love food. I love cooking. I love traveling. I love people. I love, everything about life. So my songs that I write or when I sing a song, usually that's the subject because I can relate to it more than anything else. And when people come to my show, the best compliment I ever get is someone saying, "I didn't really like jazz before, or I never listened to jazz, but I love that show." Because it's, you can put a label on everything, but in the end, it's just good music. And if you connect with the people there, then you already done your duty, and everything else is just enjoyment. It'll be a great time, is what I'm trying to say.
I don't doubt it. You put words like that on your website. If it wasn't true, somebody would have made you take it down by now.
That is absolutely true.
And I understand.
I love playing so much, and that's, I can't wait to play on Friday already.
Do you have a gig between now and then?
I don't. I have a piano at home, but that's not the same.
Not the same at all, no. And I understand from my reading that your shows kind of unfold in the moment, as it were. You don't really know exactly what you're going to do.
Yeah, I think in order to get this, you know, connections that I'm talking about, you have to be open to see what actually happens in the room. It's almost the same thing as if I would have had all the answers to what you're asking me written out before we talked, then we wouldn't have a conversation. So going into a show, it's kind of the same thing. The most important thing to do that, though, is that I find is that I have a band that can go with me in all these directions. The band knows certain structures of certain songs because it's not all standards. There's a lot of originals. So, and this band has been together for 5-6 years, and we're all best friends. I tell them the first couple of songs, and then I just see where the audience wants to go.
Tell us about the band.
There are some of my favorite players out there. My drummer is from New York. His name is Mark McLean. He's played with, you know, lots of jazz, pop artists. But to me, he's my band started having a more rootsy sound. That's what I was looking for when he came into the band. So he's a great drummer, great tambourine player, which is very important, I find. And my bass player, his name is Mark Rogers. He's a guy from Toronto in Canada. And he's been my friend for 8-9 years, and we've been traveling together for that long. We can read each other's musical minds, and we probably know way too much stuff about each other at this point. But I love them, and I, you know, we just love playing together.
Can you tell us anything about how you read an audience?
Well, it's first of all, you can never take anything an audience does personal, I find. You know, especially if you're on a tour and you have a few dates back to back, if you have a really great night or if the audience is really loud and excited in one place, if it's not the same the next day, you might take that personal, or you might think something's wrong, or you don't have the same energy going. And it's never the case. Every audience is different. It's like talking to another person. And so once you pass that, you're already opening up yourself to, well, let's see what you got. And then I'm always very, as you can tell, I can talk. And I like doing that on stage, too. I don't ramble on about stuff. But I encourage people to say stuff to me or have an actual conversation because, you know, sometimes when my bass player takes a solo, I like sitting down in the audience and watching the whole thing. And being in a theater, I find, is a funny thing because you turn the lights on and everyone is in the same room, and you turn the lights off and it becomes this, you know, just be quiet.
Yeah, the fourth wall goes up.
What's that?
The fourth wall, or the third wall, whatever
exactly.
The one is between performers and audience.
And that's the one you can't have. That's the one you need to break down. And then it's basically like talking to a person. You can tell if an audience is a little quieter, or if they like upbeat things, or if they want to participate in clapping or singing, or if they just want you to play like crazy and enjoy it, you know?
So you wander out into the audience and sit down to take in your bass player solo.
Sometimes, yeah. I love his playing, so...
What is the wildest thing that you can recall happening that you can tell us on a family radio show?
Well, I have broken quite a few strings last year. Somehow I had a year of playing a lot harder than I usually have. And I would show up, there were a couple of places I showed up, and the piano tuner would talk to me about not playing the piano, not playing the show, and those kind of things, you know, that happened. But there's also a lot of other things. My pants ripped on stage once, and things like that. You know, when you travel a lot and these things happen, there is a lot of stories that personally happen to you that people might not even look at from the audience. But, you know, to me, those are the craziest things because they catch you off guard when you're in your comfort zone. Like if you're pants rip and you have to get up and take a bow, then it's kind of awkward.
How did you handle that?
It was in Seattle at Benaroya Hall, and it's one of those newer theaters that has all hardwood and there's no curtains. So I'm walking up and I have my legs just totally together. I'm taking a bow and I'm backing away from the stage. I'm not even walking up. I'm backing away. That was only a couple of years ago.
And you live to tell the tale. That's important.
Yeah, of course. I would have told people right there, I don't take myself too seriously.
No, that's probably wise.
Yeah.
But speaking of taking yourself or somebody else perhaps taking you too seriously, I'm backing up to what you were saying about the piano tuners, what, asking you not to play the show? Wait a minute now. What, they were concerned for their precious pianos? Is that what that was about?
Well, this happened in Quebec on a tour, and the piano tuner, I guess I broke a string there the year before when I was there, and he made sure he came up to me right before sound check, before I walked up to the piano and said, if you break the piano again, or if you break a string again, you can't play the show. I'm going, this is just a piano tuner. But, you know, granted, piano tuners and people at theaters who aren't players themselves, they have this very protective thing about a piano. I mean, it is an expensive instrument, and it's a piece of furniture at the same time. But it's an instrument. You have to play it. It's alive. It's wood. It's strings, you know, so it's you have to play with it, and I think some people are just taking that too serious. That's what I think.
I'm reminded of what a fighter pilot once told me about how the fighter jets actually belong to the ground crews, and I imagine it's the same thing happening there with the piano players and the piano tuners. You know, the fighter jet pilots get all the glory, but... You know, the piano player
Without
gets all the
work.
Glory, but the piano actually belongs to the tuners, or so the tuners may think.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they show up there every month or every week tuning it. They have an intimate relationship with that instrument. I just show up once a year and play my Stride piano on it.
I got to say I'm impressed by the idea of you breaking strings on a piano. I've been around for a few minutes, and I think this is the first time I've ever heard about that happening. When did you first start to, I started to say, abuse pianos in this fashion? When did you get to the point where you're playing, where you were able to let loose to the point that you could do that?
Well, first of all, I got to make sure that it's not a regular thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it has started to happen more often and over the last 2-3 years. And I honestly think it's not that I play louder.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of dynamics in our music, which dynamics I think are important in music. And when I really want... The beautiful thing about a trio is that you can be super quiet, but also you can make it sound like a big band. I mean, not like a big band, but you can make it sound huge. Piano trio. And to do that sometimes, you know, I just really use... all my force, but I'm not digging in hard, but I'm using a lot of velocity. My hands might go down, up and down really fast. When they actually hit the strings, they don't hit it that fast, but they hit it, they don't hit it that hard, but if I hit it fast, then the hammer doesn't have, this is very technical, then the hammer doesn't have enough time to come back before the string has to vibrate for the next time I hit it, and then it breaks.
And I'm trying to find out what's going on with you, mentally, spiritually...
I'm really honestly just there, and these things happen only in times when I'm, you know, when I am playing really hard in certain passages. But they come from an honest place. They come from something that I feel or something I have to get out and something that fits with the music. It's never, people never go, oh, it's too loud, or it's always a part of what's happening. But I've surprised myself sometimes. And granted, not every piano is great.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these.
There should be a sign posted, I think, no pianos were harmed in the making of this recording. Tell us about your recordings. I think you have something pretty recent out to tell us about, right?
Yeah, well, I released a live DVD last year, but then I went into the studio not even a month ago, and we recorded a new album. This is not coming out till May, but it's... it's a tribute album. A lot of my records are originals and just reflections of my life. But over the last 2-3 years, I kept running into a musician who was a big influence on me when I was a kid in the stuff he produced, wrote, played, sang, and that's Alan Toussaint.
Mm-hmm.
And and it really, seeing him, you know, we would be on the same festival here and there, and I would always watch his show and you know, shake his hand. And
Michael, I'm losing you. Speak up a little for me, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I would always, you know, watch his set and shake his hand and be there as a fan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do that for too many people, but there's just something about his music that makes me feel like I'm 10 years old and I'm realizing why I'm doing all this.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to do a tribute album of my favorite Alan Toussaint songs and rearranged them to fit my band in particular and you know, lyrically also, once in a while I had to change things if things I couldn't say in my life. But it's an Alan Toussaint tribute album to me and they're fantastic songs. I mean, the guy is an unbelievable treasure.
May, you say?
Unbelievable.
That will be released in May?
May, yes. Yeah.
Okay. I guess this is a fair question. Do you have any idea, or is there any reason for us to believe that you may play some of the stuff from it on Friday night?
Yes, all of it probably.
It could happen, okay.
Especially since the band is coming fresh out of the studio, actually knowing how to play these songs.
Okay. My guest is Michael Kayshammer. Gold Coast Jazz Society is presenting him this Friday night at the Parker Playhouse, which is at 707 Northeast 8th Street in Fort Lauderdale. Look for information about that. The link is already up, as a matter of fact, on my Facebook page. Look for The Real Tracy Fields at Facebook.com. You do not have to have a Facebook account to visit me there. And as a matter of fact, I think there's information about it at your website, Michael, which is Kayshammer.com, right?
Yes.
KayshammerCom. You can visit Michael Kayshammer there anytime you wish.
Yeah, and I'm pretty easy to get along with.
Apparently. You've been a remarkably good sport here on Evening Jazz. We're coming down sort of toward the end of our time together, so I wanted to ask you if there's anything I haven't asked you about that you want to talk about, anything you want to tell my friends that I failed to bring up.
Well, you know, I think it's nice to talk about all these personal things about music and feelings, but just in general, I actually haven't spent that much time in Florida and in Fort Lauderdale or Miami in particular, and this is my first time actually playing in that area ever.
Really? Wait a minute. What kind of Canadian are you? All Canadians come to Florida in the winter.
I know. I've been to Florida before, but I've never played in the Miami area.
Okay.
And but then, you know, I'm living on the West Coast, so there's
always that's different.
Hawaii and
So what are you most looking forward to about your visit to South Florida, or what scares you most?
Well, there's two things. There's three things that I look forward to. That is, and I'm not saying this because we're on this radio show or we're talking about the gig, but playing is definitely number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm looking forward to hanging out with my friends, my band. And then the third thing that really matters to me is the sun or anything kind of warmer than what I have here.
We got you covered.
Perfect, because my mood doesn't do so great in cold weather.
I understand. We got you covered.
You know? I'm very excited to come out.
We're looking forward to it. My guest tonight is Michael Kayshammer, boogie-woogie piano player, and I'm not going to say the other things that come to mind about Destroyer of Instruments because it's just not true, but my understanding and his words just now indicate that he is truly the exciting performer that everybody leads us to believe, so we'll have the opportunity to check him out this Friday, the 8th of February. Gold Coast Jazz Society presents Michael Kayshammer. He's performing at the Parker Playhouse, which is located at 707 Northeast 8th Street in Fort Lauderdale. Anything else before we say goodnight, Michael?
No, it was really nice to talk to you. And you know, I'm sure on your side it's the same thing. When an interview becomes a conversation, you actually enjoy yourself. This went by like nothing.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for that.
My pleasure. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. You said you're going to send me some music, so do that, and we will look forward to your new album upcoming in May. What's the name of it? Do you know yet?
Yes, it's called Touch of Love.
Touch of Love. Okay, then. Michael Kayshammer at the Parker Playhouse on this Friday, the 8th of February. He's bringing it. What is it called again? Let me see. I want to get this exactly right. Oh, yes, Going to the Mardi Gras. Going to the Mardi Gras with Michael Kayshammer Friday night.
We even play that song. I think that's a Professor Longhair song.
Okay. Well, we'll just have to show up and see what we can give to you and what you give back to us in return.
Can't wait.
Michael K. Sammer, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thanks, Tracy. It's been a pleasure.
Safe travels. We'll see you down here.
Thanks. See you there. Bye.
Peace.